Hello and welcome to this emergency edition of the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and we've just heard the breaking news that Senator Elizabeth Warren is planning to drop out of the Democratic primary race today on Thursday. So here with me to discuss that news, why it's happening now, and how this could affect the race going forward, our editor-in-chief Nate Silver. How's it going, Nate?
Going well, thank you.
And senior politics writer Claire Malone. How's it going, Claire?
Hey, Galen.
Claire, kick us off here. To some degree, this may be self-explanatory given Super Tuesday, but why is Elizabeth Warren deciding to drop out today?
Well, she's deciding to drop out today because she doesn't have a path forward, a viable path forward. You know, I think we saw, I would say, some inklings of this on Super Tuesday when she came out really early in the night to give a speech in Michigan and kind of implored the Michigan crowd to basically vote their conscience, to not vote strategically, to vote for the person they think would be the best president. And it was kind of a, she's always a cheerful presence, but it did feel like there was sort of something really different behind the kind of perma-cheer smile. And I think she has really suffered in the past week with Joe Biden proving that he could win loads of votes in South Carolina, and that sort of set the stage for Super Tuesday when he just had a really unexpectedly fantastic night. And she really just, I think really in the end was killed by this whole quote unquote electability obsession with the Democratic Party, which I think the votes bear out now does not include a woman.
It seemed like Elizabeth Warren was in some ways making the case that she could be a unity candidate at a contested convention. Does the fact that she's dropping out, Nate, mean that as far as she sees it, or maybe even as far as the data shows, we're not on track for a contested convention?
Well, you would now need it to happen in a more unusual way, which is that you would have to have a close margin between Biden and Sanders, close enough that the delegates that have been won already by Warren and Bloomberg and Buttigieg would outweigh the margin. That's possible. I mean, we don't actually know yet how many delegates that will be. By the way, some of those delegates are statewide delegates, and those are actually essentially given back by the candidates who won them to other candidates. And so it's about like two-thirds of the delegates they won so far might be, I don't know, I'm guessing 150 delegates or so that are off the table. So if there are that many off the table, then the question is that larger than the margin between Biden and Sanders? And it could be. It actually makes Bernie have to climb a slightly higher hill if he's behind Biden. But clearly, this is not necessarily or not as likely going to be the kind of contested convention, multi-way, multifaceted fun that we thought we might get this year.
Claire, you started mentioning this a little bit, the conversation about electability that seemed to dominate the Democratic primary coverage and also in the polls of likely Democratic primary voters. Why didn't things work out for Warren? Is that basically the whole story? What exactly happened?
Yeah, I mean, it's a knotty concept, right? And Nate and I have actually had sort of disagreements about it on this podcast. But I think the shorthand electability during this primary election came to mean, in a general election, who is the best candidate to win over voters in the swing states, in the Midwest and some in the Southwest, who can win over these kind of male, independent, white swing voters. And the Democratic primary electorate spent a lot of time, I think, psychologizing those voters' preferences, perhaps correctly, I don't know, right? But, you know, they sort of seem to indicate via their preference in actual voting and in polls before that, that they didn't necessarily think that a person of color or a woman would be appealing, in part because those groups, those identity groups, have really been politicized in a certain way, certainly at an accelerated rate during the Trump administration, but beforehand, certainly with a lot of the kind of progressive social movements, the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter movement that have really gained strength in the past decade, I would say. So there's lots of really complicated reasons for why I think Warren ultimately fell victim, like so many others in this race, to that electability paradox.
Yeah. Nate, is that your sense as well, that it was really the electability focus that did Elizabeth Warren in? What were the other aspects, if not?
Her being a woman 4 years after Hillary Clinton.
Which probably plays into that electability conversation. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to... I had this rant on ABC when we were doing the New Hampshire primary night a couple weeks ago about, like, just the term electability is so vague, right? I think we should kind of ban it. But, you know, voters did express concern about her ability to beat Trump. And for what it's worth, she did not tend to poll as well against Trump as either Bernie or Biden did. But not a huge difference. But yeah, what electability means in practice to voters, I mean, I think it's two big things, right? Or three big things that are kind of maybe all interrelated. One is she did not read as electable to voters. One B is like a lot of gendered perceptions of Warren. The other thing that's problematic for her, though, is she kind of got squeezed in between Sanders on the left and Biden and Buttigieg and others in the middle. She at one point was maybe only 5 points behind Biden and second place in national polls. She slipped quite a bit from there. Once she moved from I have a plan for that to kind of more of a generic kind of liberal candidate, that seemed not to help her as much. Some of that support went to Buttigieg and other people. You know, I think she made some mistakes. I think she made a big mistake for not having her own healthcare plan and then being pretty inconsistent in terms of her messaging on healthcare thereafter.
Yeah, I think she was, I mean, let's stipulate at the beginning of this conversation, there's a lot of sexism going on here. But I do also think that there were some real, her campaign had some choices that it made that it couldn't, that maybe, you know, as Nate said, people probably read her policies as more liberal because she's a woman, right? There is that sort of perception. She generally shares the same ideological worldview, by and large, give and take, with Bernie Sanders, who's obviously still in the race, who is perceived by voters as quote unquote more electable, which to me, there's obviously a gender component in there. But, you know, towards the end of the campaign, they were also kind of going back on some promises that they had made at the start, right? Warren initially, when she set out, was like, I'm not taking any PAC money. And her finance director quit in the early stages of the campaign. Now, about 10 days ago, she basically said in this politician-y way, well, everyone else is taking PAC money, so we'll take PAC money too, probably, but we're not happy about it. You know, this idea that she knew she was struggling, and she got a lot of grief for that from, you know, the Buttigieg team in particular, I think, saying there are purity tests that you can't even pass, right? That was the line. So I think that structurally her campaign ran into a lot of problems because of the idealism of her platform that, for whatever reason, you know, Sanders hasn't really had to face the same questions. And I think some of those reasons are certainly gender.
I want to ask about what happens next and dig into a little bit more of why exactly things didn't work out. But first, today's podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/538. That's ZipRecruiter.com/538. The numbers, not the letters. ZipRecruiter.com/538. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. We're back, and before we talk about what comes next and how this affects the race going forward, I do want to ask, Elizabeth Warren has, throughout the entire year plus that we've been covering this, polled pretty well with Democrats when it comes to her favorability. You know, poll after poll that we conducted with Ipsos in the debates, she came out on top. So where is the disconnect between Democrats saying that they like her and they think she's done a good job in some of the main set pieces of this race and then people not voting for her?
It kind of feels like favorability doesn't seem to mean very much. You know what I mean? Trump had really terrible favorables throughout 2016, it didn't prevent him from consolidating the field. Warren had really good favorables, didn't seem to help her. Bernie has favorables that are just as good as Biden, but it's Biden who's getting all this support from other candidates so far and gaining, right? It's like, I don't know. I think it's just like, if you're not someone's first choice, then I'm not sure how much favorability tells us about your second choices.
Yeah, it's such a strange primary. Not to be this person, I have a piece coming out later today that's a little bit about this, right? The sort of strange psychology or pathology of this primary, where Warren is kind of what Democrats, the Democratic base, sort of say they want, right? She's relatively new to electoral politics, right? She's got the, I'm an establishment person, but I am with the leftward, the tilt of the party, because the party has become more ideologically liberal over the past few decades. So it is, I mean, to me, it all comes back to the Democratic Party is still very much a prisoner of Trump in a lot of ways, right? That so many of their decisions are driven by him. He's basically like the prime mover of this primary, which is pretty fascinating.
In the reporting that we saw this morning about Warren's plans to drop out of the race, there wasn't any inkling that she would endorse anybody. And so we simply don't know. But at this point, do we expect, and because this affects what her supporters might do, do we expect her to endorse anybody? And if so, who?
Ooh.
I was keyword searching the term endorse in all the articles I read. And so I hope I didn't miss any reporting that clarifies this. It seemed to me like it was very much an open question if she would endorse, and if so, who would she endorse? You know, I mean, you would think Sanders would be the more logical choice, but if he looks like he is kind of the... I mean, there are two things, right? One is if Bernie looks like he's more likely to be the losing candidate, then people don't like to endorse people who look like they're going to lose. Two is there some degree of animosity between Warren and Sanders? Clearly, she was, I think, perturbed after that one debate about what she thought was a misrepresentation of their conversation about could a woman win the presidency. And three is kind of what she wants for the party, because she is kind of a capital D Democrat. She might feel that, okay, maybe I prefer Bernie, although I have some issues with Bernie. But I prefer him to Biden with the bankruptcy stuff and all that. But I don't want to get in the way here and cause a big prolonged nomination process that's going to drag things out like we had in 2016. And if I weigh in on Bernie's side, then what could happen is you have a very long process that results in that maybe you actually could get that contested convention, or maybe you actually would have like Bernie come close but not quite come back, but a lot of bad feelings raised. And so, I mean, it's kind of like a question that like every Democrat is asking themselves, I think, right? Is do I want to kind of go through a long 2016 style process? And if the answer is no, then, you know, if the answer is no, then it means Biden's going to win really big over the next 2 weeks, and then it's kind of going to be over in 2 weeks. But like, I don't know what Warren's thinking, and I guess I would take at face value the reporting that she has a tough decision.
Yeah, I think everything Nate has laid out there is really right. And I think one of the reasons why, again, we're recording before she's made a public statement. I think she's talking to her staff now. I'd be surprised if she comes to a full-blown decision today, because she is, I mean, I do think she's a person who thinks about systems and structures. And obviously the Democratic Party is a structure, one that she belongs to, and one that is going to play a role that's important to her and her supporters in ideally, from their point of view, beating Donald Trump in the fall. So she does have to make this really tough choice. And I think, you know, I think she probably likes Sanders more personally than she does Biden. So of course there's sort of human being choices that you have to make on these levels. So I'm incredibly, incredibly interested to see who she endorses if she sits it out. Who knows? You know, she's a figure of huge power and import in the party. And I think if a Democrat wins in November, she will have a very important place in that administration.
In some ways, for that reason, if I had to bet, I would bet that she wouldn't endorse. But of course, you know, that's just intuition. Yeah. And it's hard for anybody to say for sure. So let's set aside an endorsement, maybe assuming that she doesn't endorse immediately, say not before Michigan. what does the data that we have tell us about where her voters might go?
I think most of it says that a slight majority would go to Bernie, but maybe not an overwhelming majority. Let's keep in mind, we don't actually even kind of know where the polls stand at this point. They're already moving a lot, and we haven't had very much, if any, post-Super Tuesday data. I think actually, like, the Lane stuff has been more predictive than people. I was always pro-Lanes, but, you know, it seems like some of the other hot takers weren't, right? But, like, I don't know. I mean, I think...
But don't the Lanes seem somewhat frustrated here between ideology and the demographics of their support, in the sense that Elizabeth Warren has more support from women, for example, and so
I'm
does
just
Biden.
Saying, ideological, okay, well, like, look at what happened on Super Tuesday. All of Buttigieg's and Klobuchar's supporters went to Biden, basically. I mean, there was kind of like in Minnesota, like a one-to-one transference between Klobuchar. I mean, that was with an endorsement, so that's different, maybe. But, like,
right.
I don't know. I mean, to a first approximation, Bloomberg and Warren drop out, and I kind of assume jointly that their support will be divided fairly evenly, maybe a little bit more to Biden because he seems to be ahead overall. But to a first approximation, I think it's probably going to even somewhat out.
Yeah, I'm looking at Morning Consult polling of second choices before Bloomberg dropped out yesterday. And among Warren supporters, it shows that second support 43% for Sanders, 36% for Biden. Does that seem about right?
Yeah, I mean, that's in a poll that had Biden ahead overall. I mean, that's not far from what our model, which uses priors instead of polls, that's not that far from what it would assume. It might have a slightly higher percentage going to Bernie than that, but it's not super far off.
Claire, I mean, when it comes to the characteristics and demographics of Elizabeth Warren's base of support, is it clear where the overlap is between Sanders and Biden?
I mean, her supporters tend to be, they shared a lot of characteristics with, like, Pete Buttigieg's supporters, and especially in the early states, of being white and college educated and kind of establishment Democrats. So you could see that group tilting over, in my reading, tilting over more towards Biden. I think a lot of Warren's supporters were Clinton 2016 primary supporter types, not Sanders 2016 primary supporter types, even if they have the liberal ideologies of Sanders. And I also think potentially with the greater emphasis of the race now on this quote unquote electability thing that, you know, you're starting to see, I think it was Vox who had that interesting piece earlier this week about, you know, are the Sanders Trump's head to heads actually sort of misleading? You know, you could see that kind of getting out more and people saying, like, listen, Biden is actually consistently the more electable person in these certain swing states and head to heads. So I do see Warren supporters as being a decently establishment leaning group ultimately, which is good news for Biden.
And that Vox report you were talking about, which I think we should talk about at some point on this podcast, was essentially saying that the reason polls show Sanders and Biden doing about the same against Trump is because a bunch of young voters say that they would support Sanders, but not Biden. And the question is, would they actually turn out in a general election? And I think we should definitely have that conversation at some point. But Nate, go ahead. What do you make of this argument?
This sounds like extremely banal, but like it's important to keep in mind the people who supported Warren are people who, by definition, did not support Sanders or Biden. And at this point, if you were one of the 12% or so of people who supported Warren on Super Tuesday, you kind of made that choice knowing that strategically you might be throwing your vote away. And so that means, like, to some extent, these people might be a little bit harder for them to win over. I mean, there's even the chance they might sit out, or they might vote for a candidate who's dropped out of their ballot. I mean, there might be some of that, right? It's different than like Bloomberg, where Bloomberg's whole argument was very tactical, right? He's like, I am a rich, empty vessel through which you can beat Trump. And I'm just going to like erase myself and be a generic Democrat, even though it's not my history, because I have lots of money and we can beat Trump. And I don't have this baggage that Biden or Bernie have, or Warren. And I'm a white man. You know, that's very different than Warren's pitch, where it's all about authenticity and persistence, right? And as she's gone from 24% in the polls at her peak to 12% now, the people who remain are kind of the most hardcore Warren stands. And so so I don't know where they'll go. Like, look, I really, really, really think they're like, oh, Bernie Sanders people are mean on Twitter. Whether that's true or not, I think it might be true. I think it's like way, way overrated as a point of analysis in the Democratic conversation. I think it's just more something that might annoy reporters and is actually very relevant. But I do wonder a bit that, like, there is a lot of animosity between Warren fans and Sanders fans, and that might make it harder for there to be a kind of clean transition for candidates who should be ideologically kind of sympathetic to one another.
Does that read for you, Claire?
It does. And I think this plays into a larger conversation about Sanders' strategy. you know, it's a campaign whose ethos was forged in the underdog fires of 2016 and has maintained a really strong culture both on the campaign and outwardly. It's sort of telegraphed that to its supporters. That is not an attitudinal stance that Warren supporters, more establishment supporters, tend to like. So it does track to me that it's a real culture clash in a lot of ways. And I would say, I guess the last thing to add is the Sanders campaign supporters do have a reputation for being sexist. So if you're a woman Warren supporter looking for a home, or if you're Elizabeth Warren herself looking and considering who to throw your support to, that's got to be a consideration that you turn over.
Yeah, and you can see that persisting in the exit polls of Super Tuesday, Biden doing significantly better than Sanders among women.
Right. Oh, absolutely. It's really interesting. Anyway, that's a whole other it's a whole other thing.
No, that is interesting. That is interesting. And you do wonder if I mean, those are pretty conspicuous splits in the exit polls. It actually seemed to be more profound than in some of the pre-election polls. So that's interesting.
All right. Well, I think we're going to leave things there. We will, of course, have more podcasts coming for you soon. As readers, listeners may have noticed, we have still not updated the primary forecast. So once we update that, we'll have a model talk out. And of course, if Elizabeth Warren does endorse someone, we'll have another podcast discussing that. So a lot coming your way in this podcast feed. But that's it for now. Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Galen.
Thank you, Nate.
All right. Talk to you both soon.
My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.